Okay, so we're for the people from the Annex class, we're talking about the minor prophets. Hopefully everyone's got a notebook. On page 17, we'll be talking about the audience and the times of the writing here in a few minutes. For the benefit of the students in the Annex class, the way we are approaching the minor prophets, we're not studying it book by book. What we're doing is we're studying all the minor prophets as a unit. And we're looking at specific things about the minor prophets. And the class we've been engaged on is what we call shaking hands with the prophet. So we're learning about the prophets and their family, their occupation, and looking at all 12 of them. So that's how we're doing this study. And tonight, as you see on page 17, we will be talking about the audience and the times of the writing. But we do that, our custom is we do a review. And so these are some questions from the last class. And so let's go through those. Question number 15. Which prophet was a herdsman and a grower of sycamore figs? Craig? Okay. Amos? Okay. Next one. Which prophet was also a priest? Matt?
Zechariah.
So he was both a prophet and a priest. And we noted when we talked about that that's not unique. Ezekiel and Jeremiah were also the same situation. They were both prophet and priest. Okay, now let's go back and review some past questions that we've covered. And let's go through that. And this will be good questions for the class joining us from the Annex. What are five reasons to study the minor prophets? Elizabeth?
As examples to avoid, when you have hope in Jesus Christ, build our faith in God's purpose, and it is God's word, and it's important for us to be able to take our rules and change them.
Okay, very good. So those were the five reasons that we covered in the class. And this first one, as examples to avoid, we used 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 6. As you recall, when we studied this particular passage, as we studied these passages in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, we know chapters 8, 9, and 10 are talking about the Christian liberties. And there in chapter 9 actually starts talking about the subject before he gets into chapter 10 of 1 Corinthians. And Paul states that as he's talking to the brethren here, that he says, we want to run the race so that we might win. And that's his point. And he starts the introduction to the section about studying the Old Testament. And sorry for the problems we're having on the overheads. And so, as Paul is talking about that, he even mentions that toward the end of chapter 9. He says, even himself, he says, I don't want to be disqualified. You know, he's also running the race, and he wants to be successful. And the point is, we're in our lives, we're in a race. We want to make heaven as our home. And in this 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 10 is to provide us some examples, actually verses 5 through 10. There are six examples that are provided from the Old Testament. And then we get down a little bit later, talks about, you know, these were written for our instruction. And these are examples to avoid. Paul goes on and talks about in that chapter that these were evil things. And these people crave these things. And the point to the brethren there is we should not crave these things. So as we study the minor prophets, a lot of examples there, examples to avoid. And what's the purpose there? Is so that we might run the race, be successful, and make it to heaven. And so I almost consider, as we study the Old Testament, almost like a lifeline. We study these things to encourage us. And we should never get to the point, we're going to study either tonight or in the next few classes about the times, the writing, we're going to see how wicked the people were. They were supposed to be God's people. And as you read these examples, you might say to yourself, that will never happen to us. We'll never be like those people. Well, that's the point in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. Down in verse 12, it says, therefore, take heed lest you fall. And so if we get to the point saying that we can't fall like the people that we're going to read about and study about, that's exactly Satan's trap. We all should be at the point of saying we can sin, we can fall short, and we can apostatize. It happened to them. They were God's people. It can happen to us. Okay, and then Elizabeth has some other examples about having hope in Jesus Christ. We also, that was the second reason. The third reason was to look at how God's plan through the Old Testament was that the Old Testament was meant to lead us to Jesus. And that was build our faith in God's purpose. And she mentioned about it's God's the Word. Of course, it's part of our Bible. And throughout these letters, you're going to see the emphasis over and over again. This is God's Word. This is God's Word. And so we study that. And then the last reason that Elizabeth mentioned is to enforce our understanding that God rules in the kingdoms of men. Now, we'll see throughout these letters, and this is not unique to the minor prophets, but other letters are kind of the same thing. And this one might be a challenge to us. Okay? We say, well, I believe the Bible. I believe these examples. I believe they're accurate. And the whole point was to build our understanding God rules in the kingdoms of men. Well, what about today? Has something changed? Does God still rule in the kingdoms of men? You see the world and all the chaos and all the killing and all the violence. It says, God still ruling? Yes. And this is an area where we can help build our faith. God rules in the kingdoms of men. No matter what's happening out there, He's still in control. It happened in the past. He hasn't changed. And so this of all these might be one where we need to focus on that. You put our trust in God. He's on His throne. He's ruling. No matter what the situation is going on, whether in our country or other countries, He is still in control. Okay, the next question we had on the review is, what is the mission of the prophets? Lisa?
I have three teachings, warnings, and encouragement to bring forth faith, repentance, and obedience.
Right, that was the main mission, to bring the people to faith, repentance, and obedience. And we'll see that as we continue our study. Okay, so we have now finished our lesson number 2, and as I mentioned earlier, lesson 2 was shaking hands with the prophet. And what we attempted to do in the last couple of class periods is to look at, in these letters, things about the prophet. You know, we looked at, well, what does the name mean? Who was their family? What was their occupation? These men not only were prophets, they had other jobs. What were some of those other jobs? What were some characteristics that we saw in the writing? And we said the purpose of knowing all that is so that when we read the writings, we might have a greater appreciation for these men. So let's quickly go through these things. Put down your notes here. And I'm going to ask you, let's step through the 12 prophets here. And what comes to your memory or minds, you tell me what you've learned through our study on Lesson 2. So the first one we'll start, we're going to do it in order that we find the minor prophets. We'll start with Hosea. And you say, well, the first thing I learned about Hosea is Rocky sure pronounces it funny. It's Hosea. Either pronunciation's fine. I do Hosea. Hosea, those are good. So, Hosea, what do we know about Hosea? Just what comes to your mind for our study? Tell me some things. Okay, you married a woman of adultery. We'll talk about that. We didn't talk about that specific, but through your reading, you know that. Other things about Hosea. Right. We didn't cover that, but we're going to get into that. The children were named. God named them specifically, and it was reasons. What about the family and the name and means? And what about the writing? What kind of man was Hosea?
Salvation, deliverance.
Right. His name, Hosea, means salvation or deliverer. Good, Javier. What kind of man was he? Okay, he was a prophet of love. Hosea, by his writings, first of all, just step back and think about it. God is going to use this man, and he's going to tell him about marrying a woman, and he's going to name his children. And then we read some scriptures here about that, and throughout that book, we see the word love being repeated over and over again. Hosea was a man of sympathy, loving kindness, and God used this man as a prophet to bring the message to the people. And that's what he was. He was a very sympathetic man, man full of love. And you can see God used him because of that with the wife, Gomer. And we'll talk about that. Okay. What about Joel? What do we know about Joel? This is a lot of information. Did he have any family? Okay, he did have a family. His father was Pethuel. That's how you pronounce it. Don't know anything about the father. It is mentioned about that in Joel. Okay, so what about Amos? What do we know about Amos?
Burden bearer.
Right, his name means burden bearer. And so interesting, Amos was a prophet to the north. The north is going to be taken into captivity shortly. Actually going to be destroyed. And what is his name? Burden bearer. Yeah, he's got a real big burden to bear. You're going to tell the nation that, you know, your time's up. You're going to be taken into captivity. And so kind of his mission kind of fits with his name. What about other things about Amos? Okay. Amos was a sheep herder. So not only was he a prophet, he was a sheep herder. Any other things that he did? Right. He was a farmer. He grew sycamore trees and grew sycamore figs, the fruit of that tree. Okay? Okay, what about Obadiah? Okay. Remember, not a lot of information provided by Obadiah. Remember that we talked about that he's going to be bringing a message about Edom. And he was known as the censor of ridicule. He said, why is Edom going to be taken in? He's going to mention because Edom has ridiculed Israel and so forth. Okay, let's look at the next prophet. What about Jonah? Of course, we know a lot about Jonah. What about Jonah?
The irony of dove and what his mission was. And he was a dove representing peace.
Okay. What kind of man was he internally? We know that's from his writing. What kind of man was Jonah?
Proud,
self-centered, egotist. He's running away from God. How can you avoid doing that? We mentioned that really, if you were to boil all that down, he was a very foolish man. And so here we see a very foolish man that God uses. Fortunately, his heart was right. God was able to turn him around and to continue his mission in preaching the word. Okay, what about Micah? What do we know about Micah? Okay, let's move on to what about Nahum? Anything about Nahum? Okay, well, think about these prophets. So the things that we covered here. How about let's try Zephaniah. Anything interesting about Zephaniah?
The great-great-grandson of Hezekiah.
Right. He had royalty. Right. He was the great-great-grandson of King Hezekiah. And some of these others, we'll skip them. But go back and review some of the materials that we covered about these men or writing, their family history, and their occupation, and hopefully it will help you as you do your readings and as we study these letters here, you have a greater appreciation for these men and what they wrote. Okay, so let's begin the lesson for tonight. So this is lesson number 3, and it's we titled it The Audience and the Times of the Writing. And our objective here is to understand the times when these prophets wrote to their particular audience. And hopefully we understand the importance of doing this. Let's have a little scenario here that if we were able to turn the clocks ahead 500 years, so the year is 2515, and we pick up some writing, and we're looking at this writing that we're reading in 2515, It says something like this. It says the kids wrote the cast in the Astrodome, and it was dated February 2010. We're 500 years in the future. Now, back then, very likely that in that time frame, we would have, what's going on? Astrodome, kids wrapping cast? What is all that about? Well, that's the reason why we study this lesson, the audience and the times of the writing. Well, what we would know here, and the key things about this is that, well, the Astrodome, we know it was a building there. We find out that there's a rodeo that happens every year in Houston about in the February time frame. And there's events where kids try to rope calves. It's an activity. And so, you know, if you were to read that way back then, you would say, well, what's the Astrodome? What is it? And who are the kids? And what's the whole purpose of that? So it's obvious why we want to study who these are, these letters, who they were written to, and the times they're writing. It helps us explain. It gives us a context in which we, as we read their writings, we can understand that. Now, if you hold your finger to the lesson, I don't know if the people in the Annals class actually have this, but turn to the text. So not only do we want to understand the audience, but we also want to understand the time frame. If you turn to the text that was provided in your notebook, there's actually a tab there. If you have a notebook, you may be blank, but hopefully the students in this class will have the text. One thing, hopefully, as you've done your reading, you will note that these texts are marked up. And if we look at Hosea and look at 1:1, you see that there's a little clock there, a little time symbol, icon. And what we've done here is throughout the text, we have noted in the text where there are time references, these time references are important in dating the book and understanding the time frame. And here in this particular case, there's two time elements. And what they happen to be is when Hosea wrote during the kings, and it gives the kings in the north and kings in the south. So that is a dating element. Now, if you turn to, I don't know what page it is, but if you turn to the text kind of in the middle, Habakkuk text, you go to Habakkuk, I don't know what page that is, but if you kind of in the middle there, if you can't find it, just open your Bibles and look at Habakkuk 1:5. Habakkuk 1:5. And there's another time event. You see the little icon, time element. And here we find, it says, look among the nations, observe, be astonished, wonder, because I am doing something in your days. You would not believe it if I were told. Behold, I am raising the Chaldeans. And so here is an event. And so as God is talking to Habakkuk, he's telling, well, look, shortly the Chaldeans are going to come in. Well, we can date when the Chaldeans came in. The first one was in 606. And you will note here that in the first part of verse 5, it says, I'm going to do something in your days. So this hasn't happened yet. But it says in your days, Habakkuk's days. That says it's going to happen in his lifetime. So these are different time elements that can be used to help date the books, either the kings or events that happen. And sometimes you'll have strong indicators of time. Other times you'll have weaker time elements. And so as you go back to the text, hopefully you notice these little clocks. And those are what those clocks are. And so those are used to help date the books. Okay, so let's look at on page 17 of the class notes. We started with a timeline. And in this timeline, I've asked you to fill in the red triangles or red rectangles, who the prophets were. So before we do that, if you can't see the overhead, look at your book. First of all, let's just kind of look at this chart here and note several things. And hopefully you notice it. First of all, there's two time charts. He says, why are there two? Well, there are two because there's so much information here, I had to break it up into two. So this first one extends from 800 to 640 B.C. So note the things that are on this particular chart. In this one, during this time period, the Assyrian kings are very, very important. And the main Assyrian kings are listed there, and also the length of their reign. So we have the Assyrian kings. Then we have the kings of Israel listed. Then we have the prophets to Israel. We've got a couple of blank boxes that we'll fill there in a moment. Then we got the kings of Judah, then the prophets of Judah. And And then down here at the bottom, we have prophets to other countries. Now, before we answer what prophets go in these different rectangles, you will note here that we've already provided two of them, Joel and Obadiah, and provided a date of Joel of 830 B.C. and then Obadiah of 845. You will note on both those have a question mark. The date is uncertain. Scholars have tried to date these books, and the date range is actually quite large for both of them. For example, for Joel, some scholars think they were written from he was written from 900 to 400 B.C., a huge, wide range. My favorite at this date, and most conservative scholars will believe it's in the 800s. And you say, well, what's the problem here? Why can't you date the book? Well, just think about it. In this particular book, there's no kings mentioned. Key events, like some of the big conquests, are not mentioned. One thing you will note in the book of Joel here is that Israel's arch enemies, Assyria and Babylon, are not mentioned at all. But what you do find of their enemies mentioned are the Philistines and the Egyptians. So you see, that kind of tells you, well, that's sure not during the time of like Isaiah and during this time frame. And so they date around 830, or you see the wide range. The other thing to note here about Joel, there were 13 other Joels in the Bible here. So which Joel was it? They don't know. It's hard to pin that down. So because of all these uncertainties, that's why the date's uncertain. But again, most conservative scholars believe that it has happened in the 800s. The same thing with Obadiah. Wide range, 845 to 400. Again, no kings mentioned, no key events. There is a key event, though, mentioned in Obadiah about an attack on Jerusalem. And there were several attacks in the Old Testament on Jerusalem. And this one is not one of the main ones. There was an attack on Jerusalem. It's you write this thing down in 2 Chronicles chapter 21, verses 8 through 10 and 16 through 17. And likely, that's the attack on Jerusalem that Obadiah is talking about. But again, there is some uncertainty. And also, just like Joel, there are several Obadiahs. There's actually seven different Obadiahs in the Old Testament. So because of that, you will note that the dates are uncertain. And that's why the point of the question mark. Now, as a side point, remember when we talked about the minor prophets, why are the minor prophets called the minor prophets? Is because of the length of the work. We also mentioned that sometimes people say they're minor because, well, they're at the end of the Old Testament. They're the latest prophets in the Old Testament. Well, you know, when we think about the prophets, Isaiah is one of the key prophets. Well, look at these two prophets. You know, Isaiah is in the 700, 730 to 690. Well, these prophets are all the 800s. These two prophets are kind of in the time of Elijah. And so the minor prophets are minor because of the length of the work. And in terms of time reference, you look at the time span. You know, they date as early as the 800s. And so you can't use the time element to say, well, they're minor because they're the last prophets and the last ones you find in the Old Testament. Okay, so let's open our Bibles to Hosea chapter 1, and let's go ahead and fill out these two rectangles here on these prophets to Israel. So who are the prophets to Israel? And you got two of them. You got a block here and a block here. How did you fill those out? Okay, Elizabeth said Amos and Hosea. Okay. Now, you might say, well, and again, how did we arrive at that? I gave you these verses here to look at, and hopefully you went through this exercise here. It's very helpful. You can see how these scholars dated these things. So let's look at Hosea 1:1, and let's note this. It says, the word of the Lord which came to Hosea, the son of Beeri, during the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah, and during the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel. So you see here why it's important to put these kings. So it mentions some kings here, Uzziah, Ahaz, Hezekiah, and Jotham. So you see that, you know, why we have the kings there. And then it mentions here about Jeroboam. Remember this Jeroboam here, and you can see that in the chart here, is actually Jeroboam 2. You remember in the old, when the kingdom divided in the north, the first king was Jeroboam. And this Jeroboam is actually known as Jeroboam too, even though the text doesn't say that. He is the second Jeroboam. Now you say, well, how did you know Hosea was in that one and Amos was in the one before that? Well, hold your finger here and go to Amos. Amos chapter 1, verse 1. And let's read what Amos says. And let's just pick up where it talks about the time. He says, which he envisioned in visions concerning Israel in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah, in the days of Jeroboam, son of Joash, king of Israel, 2 years before the earthquake. So one thing you will note here in the case of Amos, look at the southern kingdoms. Only one king is mentioned, Uzziah. And so because of that information, that's why Elizabeth had Amos first. Because Amos was just during Uzziah, and Hosea was actually given four kings. And so that's how you know that Amos is in this block, and Hosea is in that block. Now, something to note here that might kind of strike you kind of funny. When we open our Bibles, and we start saying the minor prophets, Hosea is the first prophet. And then Amos is later on. The thing to note is that these minor prophets are not ranged in chronological order in terms of the time. We just saw that, right? Here, Amos is the first one, and Hosea. And then look at, we're going to read later on about Joel, and they're later on past Hosea. So the thing to note here, this chart also tells us, is that when we study the minor prophets, it's not necessarily in chronological order. We can see that. Okay, let's move on to now, we have some other boxes. What about, and I'll actually put up the answer down here. You should get Micah down and Jonah. And hopefully, if you look at, let's go to Micah 1:1. Sometimes we look at these events here about the kings, and we just say, oh, that's interesting. But again, these are that help you place it. In Micah 1:1, just pick up in the middle here, it says, he says, in the days of Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. So here he lists the last three kings, starting with Jotham. And so you can see Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. So that's the time of Micah. Okay, now what about Jonah? We mentioned in our class about Jonah is sometimes when we study these things, we use other scriptures outside of the minor prophets to help us. And I think we already referred to the scripture. Go with me to 2 Kings chapter 14 and verse 23. 2 Kings 14:23. Here it is talking about the kings, and it's actually talking about in verse 23 about Jeroboam II, the northern king. And note in verse 24. Or it's not in verse 23. Well, you can see that this is who he's talking about Jeroboam. And then drop down to verse 25. It says, he restored the border of Israel from the entrance of Hamath as far as the Sea of Arabah, according to the word of the Lord, the God of Israel, which he spoke through his servant Jonah, the son of Amittai, the prophet who was of Gath-Hepher. Remember, we studied this verse before about where Jonah was from. He was from the city in the northern kingdom. And actually, interesting, that's not even mentioned in the book of Jonah, but it's mentioned here in 2 Kings. So not only do we get his place here, but we also are able to date Jonah because it says that this is happening during the reign of Jeroboam. So again, we look at Jonah down here, and we know Jonah was a prophet to another country, and he's prophesied in the reign of Jeroboam. So by using these pieces of information, we're able to go ahead and provide the timeline. Now, timelines are really important because note some things here. First of all is let's just first of all look at the kings of Israel. We're going to see in this particular lesson that after Jeroboam II, we know what happens. Israel is taken into captivity in 722. Look at the long reign of Jeroboam II, 41 years. And at the end of his reign, to the time that Israel was taken to captivity, there were actually six northern kings. And all but one of those kings died as a result of conspiracy. So when you start looking at these things, say, well, there are a lot of kings and what's going on? Of course, there's evil and conspiracies and anarchy going on in the kingdom. And things are very, you know, a tumultuous type of period. And then we also note that, okay, they were taken to captivity. But we're going to see here either this next week or the lesson after that, we're going to see some of these Assyrian kings coming in and starting that captivity process. And so you can kind of start tying some of these Assyrian kings into the time of the captivity. Okay, so then you have some other interesting things. Now, note something else here about this time chart. When you look at these time charts, just don't say, well, that's just something to fill out. You can look at it, and it helps you understand some things that are kind of interesting. Here is another interesting point here. So the Northern Kingdom was taken in captivity in 722. And you have two prophets here who are trying to tell them that, well, Amos saying, your time's up, you're going to be taken into exile. Hosea has a different approach. He says, return, come back to me. God will restore you. He's, you know, here's his love, the sympathy that Hosea is preaching. And he does mention at the end of his book, God will heal you, take care of your apostasy. He's still pleading with the people. But anyway, it's basically this nation is going to be taken away. Amos says it's going to happen, no doubt about it. Well, look at Jonah here. Jonah was a prophet from the north. Remember, we just read about that Gath Hepher. That's a city. We talked about where it was located. So here is Jonah, a prophet of the north, prophesying to their enemies that eventually they're going to destroy them. So, wow, what's going on here? And we know what happened in the case of Jonah and Nineveh. The people repented. Jonah didn't think they would. God's going to bring judgment. The people repented. But God evidently knew that. And you see God, even though you think, well, what Jonah should be preaching here to Israel. And they're about ready to be taken away and need all the help they can get. But here during this time frame, very close time frame to Amos and Hosea, he's going to another country. And it was productive work or results as a result of his preaching. So a lot of these time charts, as you start reading and studying, they tell you some very important things. So look at these things, and hopefully as you read the letters, go back to them and see them. Okay, let's go on now to the next time frame. The second one, you can see the time. The time here is from 640 to 430 B.C. And again, it's a similar layout, but a little bit different things that we're looking at. So instead of the Assyrian kings, we're looking at the Babylonian kings. And some of these names sound, you remember, Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar. You know, these should ring bells to us as good Bible students that we are. But what about the Assyrians? Well, I didn't place the Assyrians in this timeline. They're right before these Babylonian kings. But the Babylonian kingdom is actually going to come into Nineveh, the northern, or the Assyria, and destroy them. And so we have that. Then we also have the Medo-Persian kings. And again, look at some of these names. They should ring bells. Cyrus, Darius. Okay, and then we got the kings of Judah, the prophets to Judah. Again, we have some more prophets to other countries. And we also have some key events. We know in the southern kingdom, the deportations and the time frame, 606, 597, 586. We have the returns, three of those there. With the temple being rebuilt, the foundation laid. And so these are all important. And these prophets, you can see where they're prophesying. So let's go through and start filling out some of the these red rectangles on who they are. So let's do the next one. And actually, hopefully you've already done that. And so here, this one down here is Zephaniah. And the thing to note about this time frame here is look at where Josiah is. We know about Josiah, how he was one of the best kings of the southern kingdom. Well, Zephaniah is happening during this reign. And if you go to Zephaniah, we don't necessarily need to turn there, but if you went to Zephaniah 1:1, you will see that. So that's where Zephaniah is. And then right after him is Habakkuk. And remember, we just read about one of the things about Habakkuk in the letter, about the Chaldeans coming. Who are the Chaldeans? Well, these are the also known as the Babylonians, those are equivalent terms. And they're going to come, and during Habakkuk's reign, is prophesying that northern the Babylonian king is going to come in and take Judah into captivity. And so there is Habakkuk. Okay, and then down at the very bottom, prophet to other nations. Here is Nahum. Now, he's prophesying a judgment on Assyria. Okay, well, he prophesied, and during his time reign of his prophesying, the Babylonians did come in, and they completely leveled Nineveh, the capital city of Assyria, made it desolate. We talked about how desolate it was. Now, let's look at Nahum. Let's look at Nahum. Go with me to Nahum 1:1. And the thing we want to note about Nahum is several things here. First of all, in 1:1, it's clear that, you know, he has an oracle on Nineveh. Again, that's the Assyrian king. Okay, now go with me to chapter 2, verses 8 through 10. Nahum chapter 2, verses 8 through 10. And again, you can see here, it says, though Nineveh was like a pool of water through her days. Remember, Nineveh was a great city. We talked about it was one of the ancient great cities, Nineveh, during the Assyrian Empire. But how are this prophecy of Nahum? Though Nineveh was like a pool of water throughout her days, now they are fleeing. Stop, stop, but no one turns back. Plunder the silver, plunder the gold, for there is no limit to the treasure. Welcome every kind of desirable object. She is empty, talking about the city. Yes, she is desolate and waste. Hearts are melting and knees knocking. Also, anguish is in the whole body, and all their faces are grown pale. So you see here the destruction. Now go to chapter 3, look at verses 8 through 10. You went back and look at the text. There's a time element here. Here's Nahum prophesying to this country here, Nineveh. And this is what he says. Are you better than Noamon, which was situated by the waters of the Nile, with waters surrounding her, whose rampart was the sea and whose wall consisted of the sea? Ethiopia was her might, and Egypt too, without limits. Put and Lubim were among her helpers. This city mentioned, Noamon, is actually also known as Thebes. What's significant about this is Nahum is talking here about an area in Egypt that was conquered by Assyria. So here, Nahum's going to Assyria and says, well, you're going to have judgment. And your judgment is going to be just like what you did to Noemi in Egypt, Thebes. And scholars are able to date when the Assyrians came in and destroyed the city in Egypt. And it happened right around 63 B.C. And then eventually Nineveh, after Nahum prophesied, eventually fell in 612. And so you see here how these writers are using events and places and things in the history, that the things that are happening to use as their message as they as he prophesies to this particular nation. Okay, let's now look at the other triangles. And hopefully you've already filled out the two right around when the temple was finished. Again, we're very familiar here with the history here when the exiles returned back to Jerusalem. They were to rebuild the temple, and they started that work in 536. But because of opposition, they stopped building the temple. And so you have these two prophets, Haggai and Zechariah, come in and to get the people back to complete the temple. And there, shortly thereafter, the temple was finished in 516 B.C. And so you see how all these things are kind of tied into these events that happen. The thing that's interesting about Haggai and Zechariah, if you look at some of the time references of all the minor prophets, these time references in these two books are very exact. They will give the king, they will give the year of his reign, they will give the month, and they will actually give the day. And there's numerous specific time references. So here in these two books, we talked about weak and strong time references. Well, here in these two books, some very strong time indicators. You've got the king, the month of his reign, the day, and the month. And there's several of them. And the prophecy actually is dated throughout its work. And then the last one, of course, we have Malachi as the one at the very end. Okay, so hopefully you're able to fill out those rectangles, and hopefully you can see the value of a timeline, and it ties in key events and the kings that are happening and helps us understand it. Now, just as a side note here, note something else. Actually, just look at your sheet there about Malachi. Note that from the time of Haggai and Zechariah, there are many years between their prophesying and Haggai. There's a big gap there. Interesting, we're going to find as we read Malachi, the people, and you're aware of this, about their attitude, their irreverent attitudes, the things that they were doing, their married foreign women. Well, did they learn from the past? I thought that happened, a married foreign women happened when they conquered the land. You know, that started way back then. Well, they're getting back into this practice that happened hundreds and hundreds of years ago. And then you have this prophet here coming in and talking to them about their conduct and their irreverence. The other thing to note as you look at the time frame is we have Ezekiel and Daniel. If you look at the second time frame there, and note that these were prophets during the exile. You say you don't find the minor prophets involved in that. So there is a gap here when the minor prophets during the exile, there were none. They were before and after the exile. And so Ezekiel and Daniel still were the main prophets of the exile. Okay, so let's now move to the next part of the lesson was to identify who the contemporary prophets were. And I asked you to fill out this table. And we'll start with Hosea. And there were actually three other contemporary prophets. Who were those prophets? On Hosea? For Hosea? I'll show you here in a minute. The three other prophets that were contemporary with Hosea was Amos, Isaiah, and Micah. I think you mentioned Micah. So these are the other three prophets. And, of course, for the other prophets, you have the same names. Now, what do we mean by contemporary prophets? All we're mentioning here is prophets that were prophesying during the same time frame. And in some cases, the prophets knew each other. It may be, even though they were prophesying around the same time, they may not have known each other. But that's all we're looking for is just when were these prophets prophesying about the same time frame. Now, if we go back to this time chart here, you kind of see that, right? Here's this time frame here when a lot of things are happening. Assyria has been taken into captivity, and Isaiah, and so you see here are the four. They're kind of all together. One could argue, well, what about Jonah here? So I'm just asking you to kind of think about when the prophets were prophesying. And in some cases, like here in Micah and Isaiah, some of the things that Micah is going to be writing about is almost identical to Isaiah. And whether Micah got it from Isaiah or Isaiah got it from Micah, don't know. So sometimes the writings, there's some similar things. And in this case, in that particular case, they're almost identical. Okay, now let's go on to the next one. What about if we drop down to the... I asked you about the Nahum. What prophets of Nahum... were contemporary with Nahum. What did you have for that? Okay. Right. So we got Habakkuk, Zephaniah, and Jeremiah. And again, we can fill those same prophets out for the other ones. And again, going back to the timeline, you go back to the timeline, you'll see that all four of those are kind of grouped together. You see the timeline here, and there we have all the four prophets, Zephaniah, Habakkuk, and of course we have Jeremiah and Nahum. Now the thing to note about this thing, a lot of important information, is look at Josiah. Remember, I said Josiah was one of the best kings, if not the best king, Look at all the help he had. He had four different prophets in that time frame. Now, again, did they know about these things? We don't know, but definitely there were four prophets all during the reign of Josiah. Okay, our time is up. We'll stop here and pick up with the filling out the remaining of the contemporary prophets. And then we'll move on to who the audience is, and then we'll talk about some of the times of the writing. So if you didn't have a chance to finish the lessons through this other parts of lesson 3, I ask you to do that before Sunday. Thank you for your good attention.